Some people say data is the new oil, the raw material for the 21st century economy. But for data to flow like oil, there has to be infrastructure. Computers around the world need to be able to communicate safely and securely. So, what happens when that system breaks down? When the world's economy is ground to a halt because of an attack on critical computer systems. As it turns out, something like that actually did happen.
Absolutely everyone is dumbfounded. They're just watching their computers be locked up by the thousands and kind of standing there wondering what to do next.
This is Raw Data, a podcast about how information becomes power. I'm Mike Osborne. Andrea Mustaine is away. Today's show, the worst cyber attack in history. At least so far.
Anyways, let's move on to the next story. A major global cyber attack has spread across Eastern Europe, causing severe disruption in Ukraine and Russia.
It started in June of 2017.
Ransomware is a very nasty piece of work. This is locking whole hard drives, essentially making the hard drive in the computer unusable.
June wiped data from banks, energy firms, and senior government officials' computers across Denmark, India, and the United States.
Still a mystery tonight who is behind it.
I wanted to know more about how it all went down. So I got in touch with Andy Greenberg. He's a senior writer at Wired Magazine.
I write about cybersecurity, and I've written a book called Sandworm about the most dangerous hackers in the world.
Andy has spent a lot of time digging into cyber attacks, and specifically this one. The way Andy tells the story, the whole thing started in Copenhagen, in the headquarters of a giant Danish shipping company called Maersk. Engineers in the Maersk IT department were preparing a software update.
And one of them noticed all of a sudden that his screen went black. And he thought that it was some kind of software upgrade by this other IT team, and he was kind of annoyed. So he stood up and he looked around the room. And as he looked around the room, he watched every other screen in the room go black in a wave of black screens, black, 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 black. And then as the computers rebooted, some of them started to show this ransom message that said, oops, your important files have been encrypted and you need to pay $300 in Bitcoin to access them again. Employees are just watching their computers be locked by the thousands, realizing that they need to unplug those machines as soon as possible. So they're running down the hallways, they're jumping over the access turnstiles to get into other parts of the building. You know, in some cases, they're running into rooms and unplugging computers in the middle of meetings without any explanation, because they know that every second means hundreds or thousands more computers will be hit by this worm.
Maersk is an international shipping conglomerate. They own ships, containers, terminals, and ports all around the world.
Pick a point on the globe, any point, and Maersk Line won't be far away.
They're responsible for moving about one-fifth of the world's goods. Whatever you buy on your next trip to the grocery store or Target or Home Depot or whatever, chances are Maersk helped get it there.
The future is now, and we're ready. We are Maersk Line.
So this worm that was locking computers and demanding Bitcoin ransom wasn't just attacking the Maersk office in Copenhagen. All around the world, from Elizabeth, New Jersey, to Los Angeles, Singapore, to Karachi, the worm was spreading like wildfire. Pretty soon, it was affecting the ground operations, especially the ports. Usually the way things work at a port is that trucks check in, and a piece of software tells the trucks where to go, what to drop off, and what to pick up. But with the computers locked, the whole system was ground to a halt.
The real choke point were the gates that let the massive 18-wheelers come in and out of those ports. So the very first step of that system was broken. The gates themselves were paralyzed. The trucks were arriving at that gate, and there was simply nobody telling them what to do. So they were stuck, and they began to line up thousands and thousands, ultimately tens of thousands of trucks lining up for miles with no idea of what was going on. Maersk had no way to communicate, in fact, to the truck drivers, to the trucking companies, to the people who owned the stuff that was on the trucks, to tell them what was happening as this kind of crisis built.
What were the truckers doing? I mean, some of these ships and some of these containers must have perishable goods. I mean, was there any kind of plan for this sort of thing?
Well, you know, a lot of people, when I tried to get them to explain how a terminal works, they analogize it to an airport. And when your flight is canceled, you have to find somewhere to rebook. You have to either not go or you have to find another airplane to take you. And it was something like that. I mean, every single one of these tens of thousands of containers on the backs of trucks had to be sent some other way. And in the meantime, many of those containers had to be refrigerated. So that meant that thousands of the drivers had to figure out where to plug in somewhere. They had to find some electrified warehouse just to sit in the meantime so that whatever avocados or cauliflowers or something inside didn't rot. And I'm sure many did, in fact, rot. I've heard then in the months following this, many of those containers were lost and never even found again because the system is simply just so complex. And when this kind of bomb hit it, it was just pandemonium and it was hard to keep track of everything.
So ships and trucks carrying millions of tons of goods from food to drugs, cars to clothing were just stuck. The database telling them where to go and what to do was wiped out. Utter confusion. And of course, businesses expect their goods to be delivered. So this standstill was costing money, which, you know, begs the question, why not just pay the Bitcoin ransom? Well, it turns out that this was not a normal ransomware attack.
Ransomware usually works in this way where your files are encrypted and then you have to pay some fee and you get the key to unlock your files. And that's how the hackers make money. But in this case, the hackers had no plan to decrypt anything. They weren't actually interested in making money. They were just encrypting all these files and computers to permanently lock them.
This worm was called NotPetya. It got its name because when it first hit, it looked like part of a family of ransomware that had first shown up in 2016 called Petya. But when it became clear that this was not about ransom, a cybersecurity firm called it NotPetya. This worm took advantage of vulnerabilities in computers running certain Windows operating systems. Once it penetrated a network, it could steal passwords and automatically spread to other computers at lightning speed. It was the fastest spreading attack ever. It encrypted each computer's master boot records, which basically means the computer didn't even know where to look for its operating system. And once inside, there was no way to undo the damage.
So to recover, you would have to essentially rebuild the computers from scratch, from some backup. And that's what Maersk had to do. But when we're talking about a network of 45,000 computers, I believe, that is an enormous undertaking.
Maersk's IT department set up a war room in Maidenhead, England, which is a small town just outside of London. Their mission? To rebuild the Maersk network.
They very quickly found that they were lacking one of the most fundamental pieces of the backbone of that network, and that was a backup of the domain controllers.
A domain controller basically controls and manages who has access to the entire Maersk digital operation. In effect, it's like the master key to the kingdom. They had backups of their data, but without the domain controller, they wouldn't be able to rebuild their system. Now, Maersk thought they had backups of their domain controller and that they'd protected themselves.
The domain controllers, and Maersk had more than 100 of these, they were designed to back up to each other. So if one of them went offline, you would, of course, have, you know, dozens and dozens of others that had a copy of the of all those rules that each domain controller enforces. But what Maersk hadn't planned for in this kind of like redundancy copying system was a situation where every single domain controller goes out at once, and there is no copy. And that's exactly what happened with NotPetya. when they initially learned that this was the case, there was a moment of panic. And then they began this process of just searching the entire world for a backup of their domain controllers. And they called every data center that might possibly have one and kept striking out until finally they found one backup on one machine, and it was in Ghana. And that's because there had been a power outage in this one data center in Ghana, and that had left one domain controller in that country offline. So because it hadn't been infected, that one domain controller still had a backup of all of those rules that had to be populated out to every other domain controller in the world.
So now the problem became how to get that one last copy of the domain controller from Ghana to England, where, remember, Maersk had set up their IT war room. But the internet bandwidth coming out of Ghana wasn't strong or secure enough, so they realized they were going to have to transport it physically across continents. But then they learned that the Ghanaian engineers didn't have the proper travel visas.
So they had to do this comically complex handoff where somebody in the UK flew to Nigeria, I believe, and the Ghanaians flew to Nigeria as well, and they did a handoff in the airport of the data on a USB drive that was then flown back to Maidenhead, where it could become the first piece of rebuilding the giant Maersk network and bringing the company back online.
More on the aftermath of the attack after the break. All told, Maersk estimates that the NotPetya cyber attack cost them $300 million. Now, Andy Greenberg says if Maersk had been the only company affected, it would have been a devastating attack.
But Maersk was not the only victim of this attack, or even the biggest victim. The pharmaceutical company Merck lost $870 million in this attack. That alone would be record-setting. But the French construction firm Saint-Gobain lost $384 million. FedEx lost $400 million. Mondelez, the parent company of Nabisco and Cadbury, they lost $188 million. Reckitt Benckiser, which makes Lysol and Durex condoms, lost $129 million.
But even these eye-popping dollar amounts don't capture the full extent of the destruction. It's hard to put a real cost on the attack because the ripple effects were so far-reaching. For example, Andy told me hundreds of hospitals were hit.
I spoke to people who worked in American hospitals and told me stories of trying to rebuild or find missing updates to people's medical records with only hours to go before they were due to be transferred to a different hospital for some procedure or surgery. And when that is multiplied across the scale of NotPetya with hundreds of hospitals, thousands and thousands of patients, you really can't say with any certainty that no one suffered or even lost their life as a result of this attack.
Okay, so this worm hits Maersk, FedEx, Merck with devastating global effects. But if it wasn't about a Bitcoin ransom, why would hackers want to do this? Like just pure anarchy? Turns out, Maersk was probably not the target of NotPetya. None of these companies were.
The real target of NotPetya was Ukraine.
Ukraine was hit especially hard. Its power grid, its government offices, banks, and grocery stores.
And it devastated the country.
This time, the first reports of trouble came from Ukrainian banks.
It shut down 22 Ukrainian banks, ATMs, card payment systems, every government agency, 2 airports, 6 power companies, 4 hospitals in the capital alone. It really was a kind of scorched earth attack across the entire country of Ukraine, which notably is at war with Russia. But worms, these kind of hyper-infectious specimens of malware, they spread by their very nature. And this one immediately spread beyond Ukraine's borders.
So how exactly did this worm get beyond Ukraine and into Maersk, FedEx, and the rest of the global economy? It had to do with how NotPetya was built to infiltrate networks in the first place, by sneaking into software called MiDoc. MiDoc is accounting software, and it's really common in the Ukraine.
Really, anybody who is doing business with Ukraine or filing taxes in Ukraine had this software somewhere on their network. Maersk, for instance, had MiDoc installed on just one computer in its Odessa office on the Black Sea coast. And that was enough for NotPetya to get a foothold and infect their entire global network. Whether that was an accident or not, whether NotPetya was intended to hit Maersk and Merck and FedEx and all of these multinational companies, many of which were in Russia as well, to be clear. We don't know if that was intended or not. We'll never really know. But NotPetya was somewhere between reckless and just unbelievably malicious in its scope.
The only reason Maersk and all these other companies were affected is because they were in the blast radius of NotPetya. Andy told me that Russia's cyber campaign against Ukraine is brutal. The Russians have been developing cyber weapons to go after banks, the media, and critical infrastructure, sometimes shutting off power to homes and hospitals in the dead of winter.
There has been a push for years to come up with a kind of Geneva Convention for cyber war that would limit the scope of attacks to, you know, military targets or government targets and spare civilians. But they've gone nowhere, in part, I think, because even Western countries want to be able to preserve the ability to legally do this to their adversaries. I have talked to both Obama and Trump administration officials who told me, we do this too. We want to be able to do this too. We want to be able to turn off the lights. We want to be able to go after their infrastructure if we are in a kind of no-holds-barred war. But what Russia was doing to Ukraine did immediately spill out to the entire globe and exact an enormous cost. So on an internet without borders, we are essentially all Ukraine. We are all at the doorstep of an adversary like Russia, and we ignore that threat at our own peril.
So do you expect another attack on the scale of what NotPetya represented?
I don't think that Russia truly paid a price anywhere near in keeping with the damage that NotPetya did. And I watched North Korea and its kind of reckless behavior, and Iran, who has inflicted the same kind of damage on a smaller scale to Saudi Arabia, for instance. And it doesn't seem like anyone in the international community is making the effort necessary to rein this in. So I do think that the path from here is just more escalation. And I do expect that while NotPetya was the biggest cyber attack in history, it won't keep that mantle for long.
Andy Greenberg writes for Wired magazine, and his new book is Sandworm, A New Era of Cyber War and the Hunt for the Kremlin's Most Dangerous Hackers. You've been listening to Raw Data from PRX. Catherine Fenollosa produced this episode. Our editor is Curtis Fox. Ian Koss is our sound designer. Our theme is by Michael Linder at Hat Pineapple Productions. Additional support from John Barth, Genevieve Sponsler, and Ray Pang. We used Trent, the AI transcription software platform, for this and all our shows. Visit Trent.com, that's T-R-I-N-T.com, to learn more about their transcription service. Raw Data is supported by the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University, whose mission is to produce interdisciplinary research on critical global issues. Learn more about their research and upcoming events at fsi.stanford.edu. Funding for Raw Data is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science, technology, and economic performance. Andrea Mustaine will be back next time, thank God. I'm Mike Osborne. Thank you for listening.